Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algie, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to Ages of Rock podcast. This is episode 107. Tonight's guest, we have Tom from Classic 78, which is going to be on here in a little bit. Before we get to that, we're just going to talk a little bit about what's happening through this week.
Hey, what day is the show going to be aired?
Hey, and it will be.
Yeah, Dennis, what day?
We're trying to do this. I know, we're trying to make this really cool. But anyway,
you have a script, man. Follow the script. Come on.
I got it right here. Thursday, February 8th, this show will be
on 2018.
And the reason we're doing this, if you didn't notice last week, and you know something else we need to add to this list, and I'm just going to show how we work this show. We need to, for the people who haven't heard the show and don't know who we are, my name is Dennis Talbot. I'm one of the co-hosts. We also have Bill Algie. Bill, say something. And we have Alan Tate.
That would be me.
There we go. That way people can put
that's a good idea.
We need to add that to that list of our little things.
We just get tattoos on our foreheads. So, there's plenty of forehead up here. You can put Tate, Bill.
Alan could do like the whole thing right here. We could just anyway. So anyway, we're going to talk about things that are happening through the week real quick before we get to our guest. Bill, what happened this week? We had the Super Bowl. Was there some entertainment? I didn't watch, so fill us in.
Well, entertainment is subjective.
Entertainment is subjective. This is going to be really funny. The halftime show was Justin Timberlake and
Janet Jackson there? Did she do anything?
A nipple slip would have been an improvement. there wasn't. Actually, probably a nipple slip from Justin Timberlake might have been an improvement.
Wow. That bad, huh?
Well, you know, I don't know. Anyway, I like Justin Timberlake, so I like most of his music. I have downloaded quite a bit of it, but it really just didn't really do much for me. I posted this on one of our buddies' podcast's website, which was, I think he sang less than Vince Neil does, if that's possible.
Wow. That's very little.
Which was about every third or fourth word, or a couple of lines here and there. And, you know, he was busy running from one stage to the other. They had like four or five stages set up, or three or four stages. It just seemed very disjointed. It just, to me, it seemed like a mess. I mean, a couple times he got like on a stage and did part of a song and it made sense and he sang then, but otherwise it was just disjointed. And then he's sitting at this big white piano and they pull this thing drops and they show this thing a Prince because it's in Minneapolis, right? Which is where Paisley Park is. Right. And they play I Would Die For You.
Right.
Which I thought was strange that they're playing I Would Die For You for a guy that died of a drug overdose.
Right.
You know, it just, to me, it just kind of seemed a little.
There's weird. Other songs. But there's other songs.
There's a thousand other songs.
A million other songs, yeah.
I just thought it was kind of weird. So that was my take on it. And Lisa thought it was great because she likes Justin Timberlake. She thought it was really good. I also thought he looked like a homeless person because his clothes didn't match. And he had all this camo stuff on. I'm like, what the hell is he wearing? I get home today and I find out he's announced his world tour, which is the Man in the Woods tour. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense. He looks like a man in the woods. All right. So we're sitting at dinner tonight. This is going to be funny. And we're sitting at dinner tonight. And I said, hey, Noah, did you watch or Lisa said, I said, ask him about the halftime show. So she asked me, she said, so what did you think of the halftime show? He goes, swear, unprompted, we had not talked about this at all. He goes, it wasn't very good. And she goes, well, what wasn't it very good? She goes, well, he said, he only sang like every third or fourth word. He didn't even sing half the songs. I'm sitting there, going, see, there you go. You're the minority. Yeah. So I went up and hugged him. I said, "That's my boy," which was funny.
Right.
But you know, I think that they got to have to start doing something different. I mean, Lady Gaga was pretty good when she was on there a couple years ago.
So,
and Bruno Mars was really good. He right. just wasn't that great. And
so
and,
I didn't watch it. Like I said, I mean, to be honest, swear to God, I never watched 1 second of any part of the Super Bowl, even a commercial. Was it just Justin Timberlake? Whatsoever. I mean, there was no other people that were
there. Yeah, it was the only other people that were there was when they dropped the thing and they showed.
Right.
No, he had a band. So didn't up
have
there, multi-
but I'm saying they of... didn't have multiple stars. No. It was just us.
No. So, and
I was hearing references to Bruno Mars and everything else, but I guess they're talking about previous.
Yeah, that past. Gotcha. Past
okay.
Year. Yeah.
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
You know, I just think they're going to, you know, they got to do something different. It's not, I don't know.
It's a fucking football game. So, seriously, it's a football game. You know, who gives a shit? I mean, seriously.
Well, but the
millions
point
of
is,
people.
They have but they got to put together. But they got to put together a concert. I mean, here's a football. They got this football game going, and they've got to put together a concert.
It isn't that. It's just. It's the people they're picking.
It's a fucking football game. Sorry, I'm gonna.
No,
just,
that's okay.
I'm gonna rant.
It's fine.
I don't care.
Well, then
I don't
shut up. This wasn't your segment anyway, dumbass.
It's my opinion. This show's very opinionated, remember?
Yeah, it is somewhat opinionated. Anyway, I mean, I just think that they need to look for some other artists because they keep going back to the same well over and over again, and it's getting a little bit old, and who should they have? I don't know. I really don't know who they should have. I think
they keep going back to the same well because, for the most part, they know it's safe.
Well, Timberlake wasn't safe last time because he got a nipple.
Well, that's the reason that they put all of that on a delay.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, she was the reason. That all started.
The halftime show is on a delay because of that incident. But ever since then, you know, they've...
Every live show's on a delay.
They've picked artists that they can kind of, well, that's like making Red Hot Chili Peppers, and I don't know how many of the artists
come out in their socks.
Well, they didn't that time, but they come out with their instruments and they didn't even have wireless packs or anything. You know, they made no effort to hide the fact that they weren't live.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, in Justin's, He did make one kid happy. There was a kid up there you took like 3 selfies with because the kid's cell phone quit working and shut off and right at the end. And he stood there and waited until he got his cell phone back on and then took a couple selfies with him, which was kind of cool. I mean, he didn't have to do that.
I saw a meme where they had the kid. He's like looking up like Google, who is Justin Timberlake?
Yeah.
Well, my favorite meme about Justin Timberlake was you talk about his outfit. Somebody did one of Bob Ross painting the thing on his shirt.
Yeah, that's the one I thought.
I saw that. I was like, that's the funniest shit ever. Painting his shirt.
So if we think about it, by the time this episode airs, we'll put those memes on the webpage.
We will.
Yeah, funny stuff.
Yeah.
Alan, you got anything for this week?
Real quick. Tomorrow night, I'm going to a concert here in town for the band called In This Moment. And
cool.
I really don't know much about them, but, you know, not the first time I've gone to see a show that I didn't have a clue what the hell was going on.
Something new. You might become
a fan.
That's
exactly right.
Yeah, didn't you go see this band called Fifth Degree Burn one time that you didn't know anything about? They went anyway.
Well, I'm going to tell you how bad that band was. They let me get on stage and play with them.
Yeah, that was a mistake. No.
Freebird!
Yeah. Hey, real quick, too. Only thing I got before we get Tom on the show is... turned on to some new music, 12 Stones. Bill mentioned this band here a week or so ago, and I was bored one day out in the garage and turned them on Spotify, and damn, I like those guys. Yep. So thank you, Bill.
Stuff.
I mean, it's some new music. I like it. And Black Star Rider has been listening to them since last week.
Yep.
Love that. I really do. I hadn't really gave them – I didn't get a chance to listen to a lot of it before the show, and after the show I've pulled up a few more and listened to them, and love it. I mean, I was a big Thin Lizzy fan beforehand.
You can definitely hear it.
Oh, you can definitely hear it. You
can
definitely hear it. But it's still, it is very... Oh, and real quick, too, Kelly posted a thing on her page yesterday. The guy from Disturbed and Miles Kennedy do the Sound of Silence, and Miles is doing backup with him, and he's like way the fuck upper. You know how Miles' voice is? And it'll give you a chill. I really wasn't a big fan of that song, but with Miles singing along with it.
I have to check that out.
It's really.
I didn't
they
like
did that as a
Disturbed.
Single. They put that out, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, it was
Disturbed
on the last.
Put it out.
Yes, like yes,
2 years ago or something
album.
Like that.
Yeah,
a year ago or something.
But it's live with him and Miles Kennedy. Matter of fact, I will share that to the page because Kelly shared it on her page, so I'll share it to our page. But it's Miles. You know, Miles can't sing anything bad. He's so cool. I like Miles.
I can
so anyway,
to him sing the phone book.
Miles, you want to be on our show? Really?
I'd like to have Miles.
We should just reach out.
Should reach out. He's
the worst
nice
that's
going to
happen is we'll get ignored again.
All right, so let's just quit talking and let's get Tom on the show. How's that?
Tom?
So let's welcome Tom from Classic 78.
Right now I have
hey
this. How you doing, Tom?
Doing great.
All righty. Hey, this is funny because Alan and I went to a show here in Nashville around Christmas time, and on the way down I said, you got to listen to this thing that I got off iTunes. And I had heard you guys, I think I heard you on Three Sides actually first, and I downloaded them off of iTunes, got side one, and then of course then you had side two come out, so I got that. So I played it for Alan on the way down, and Alan's like, holy shit. This is the greatest shit ever. So anyway, when we got down to Atlanta, we didn't know that you were going to be there, and when we walked in, I told Alan, I was like, those are the guys. Those are the guys from Classic 78. So we're glad to have you on tonight, because we like to talk all about this album that you put out. We're holding it up, the ones that you gave us, the Classic 78, the unoriginals, includes a sticker
right.
And a tattoo.
That's right. That's if you're going to do it, you got to do it right. So we put the sticker and the tattoo in there.
Actually, I've used the stick. I've used the tattoo, but I can't show you.
awesome. So Tom, just talk us through from the beginning how this became. I mean, how did you, what were you, was it some beers with some friends? I mean, how did this come about? How did this idea come about?
Sure. I grew up in the 70s. You know, I was just a kid. I was born in 1970, so by the time I was six, I had discovered Kiss through the older kids in my neighborhood, and I was just infatuated with them from that time on. And so I always have, even to this day, I have a connection to the 70s era of the band, because I just totally absorbed all of that music and just would stare at the album covers and the posters and all that stuff, just like all of us did, I'm sure, you know.
Exactly.
But and you know, so through the years, I stuck in, you know, with Kiss as a fan, and even with different band member changes and whatnot. But it was always those early records that really connected with me. So, long story short, on that, around the time that Sonic Boom was going to come out, you know, they were talking about how they were going to make a classic Kiss record. That was kind of what they were going for, you know, to kind of capture some of that magic. And I just asked myself, you know, I wonder if I were to try to write a 70s Kiss song, would I be able to do it? You know, I know that stuff so well, and you know, I play guitar and I played that material live, and then, you know, even just learning how to play guitar was from those records. So I was like, I think I might be able to do this. So I did it as a little bit of a challenge to myself, and I wrote a song called Rock and Roll You, which is on side one of our first EP, which is also included on the CD that you held up. Right. And I wrote it just at home by myself with a drum machine, and you know, I put down guitars and I put down a vocal idea and whatnot, and I kind of sounded a little bit like Gene, which I was surprised because I didn't know I could do that. I was just trying to see if I could write music and get a song that approximated the 70s Kiss song. And so I played it for my friends who were also Kiss fans and also musicians, you know, musicians rather. And they were like, wow, that's really cool, you know. And I wrote a couple other things too, and I played them those, and they're like, this is really cool. And I just kind of thought, wow, this kind of be interesting if I could record these properly. And, you know, I kind of did a decent Ace vote. You know, I knew I could do a kind of a good Ace voice, and then I realized I could do a pretty good Gene voice. You know, I figured if I could find a guy who could sing like Paul, we could just release this a couple songs just and get them out there online just to see who salutes, you know, just as a fun thing. And so once we decided to do that, we meaning the drummer Rory, who's been a friend of mine since you know the mid 80s, early 80s. He's a great drummer. We played in different bands and stuff together. So Rory and I started recording some of these songs, and I kept writing songs, and it became easier, not easier to write them, but easier to come up with ideas to work with. And so we cut a couple things and we listened to it back and went, wow, this is kind of fun. This is kind of cool. So all we had to do next was find a guy who could sing like Paul. And our buddy of ours, who I grew up with, who subsequently became a really good friend of Rory's as well, isn't necessarily a vocalist, but he is a massive Kiss fan, just like I was. And he and I discovered Kiss at the same time when we were kids. He actually, he's not a singer per se, but he actually, when he sings, he sounds a lot like Paul. So I thought, oh, we'll get our buddy to do a vocal, and we'll just walk him through it and get some good takes, and we'll use those. But he ended up getting a nasty head cold, and it screwed him up for about 3 months. And I was like, I got to get this thing out. So just out of on a whim, I went online and I started to search, you know, like Googled, like, you know, singer who sounds like Paul Stanley or whatever. And within a half hour, I found this guy, Joe, who lives in upstate New York. And he had a couple clips of him singing Kiss songs, like 100,000 Years and Tonight You Belong to Me. And it sounded just like Paul. So I sent him an email, told him what we were doing, asked him if he was interested in maybe singing on some of this stuff. If I send him a couple of samples, he can take a listen and let me know what he thought. And I sent him a couple tunes, and then the next day he says, I'm in, you know. So between Rory and myself, we had all the guitars, bass, and Rory's drums. We had the Ace vocal and the Gene vocal, which is what I provide. And now that we had a really strong Paul representation on the vocal, that was the final piece of the puzzle. So we moved forward and ended up releasing Side One, which was that was in like Valentine's Day of 2017, and we just released it unannounced. Boom, here you go. You know, I created a website, Facebook page, and just sent it out, you know, to the world. And the fan base just gravitated towards it. You know, a certain segment of the fan base. There's other, you know, there's some fans who don't like the 70s Kiss as much as the others. But
right.
The people who like the 70s stuff really gravitated towards it. And that's how it started.
Wow, that's cool.
I really wish you would have got this done and they were able to put this out instead of Sonic Boom. Could have sold the songs to them and went, hey, we really did make a classic Kiss record. Try this.
I know. It's pretty cool because it was done strictly for fun. We didn't have any pressure or anything. You know, we worked hard on it to make sure that it was as good as it could be. And, you know, if we got goosebumps listening to something, or if we smiled listening to it going, wow, that was cool, we kind of pulled that piece off or that song off, or wow, this one is really something. If we got those feelings as Kiss fans from our own music, then we knew, okay, that song, you know, touched the mustard. We can release these six songs, and they give us enough of that,
right,
or what we need, or what you'd like to hear from a 70s Kiss record, you know.
Exactly. So how hard was it to capture that sound? I mean, even the guitar sound, the drum sound. I mean, you guys got it. I mean, to me, if somebody asked me, like, you know, what is Classic 78, I would say they sound like extra songs left off of Rock and Roll Over, to me. I mean, they're like, you know, these are, you know, say, what, 10 songs or what is it, 12 songs.
12 songs. Yeah.
12 songs that were just extras and weren't released. I mean, that's how good they are.
It was hard to do it, but what was good is that we, like, Rock and Roll Over is such an important record to all of us, you know, the guys involved in this. So that was a yardstick that we wanted to measure things by. But also, you know, stuff like Dress to Kill and right. Side 4 Alive 2, you know, I think what we were able to do is not exactly replicate or duplicate the exact production on from Rock and Roll Over or from Love Gun or from Dress to Kill, but capture enough of those production techniques throughout different songs that it's so reminiscent of it that it takes you where it needs to take you without actually being an actual, you know, replicated production. For instance, the Standing Tall is right off of side four of Alive 2, but the drums are a little tighter. They're not that John Bonham type of sound that they got from Peter's Kid on that record, you know? On side four of Alive 2, the drums are very bombastic, and it sounds like he's in a, you know, it's like sounds like a Zeppelin type of drum thing. But ours are a little bit more, flat and less, you know, like a closed room as opposed to a gigantic cavernous room. So, which leans more towards Rock and Roll Over or Dress to Kill, where it's a drier drum sound. So even though you have a song that the guitars sound like, the riff sounds like something off of side four, the drums might sound like Rock and Roll Over, or, you know, the riff might sound something off of Love Gun, but the guitar tone sounds like Rock and Roll Over, you know? So it's a hodgepodge of different things, not out of, not by design, but out of necessity, you know? Just to give you a quick example, you know, is the guitar tone. I wanted to really approximate a good Rock and Roll Over type of guitar tone, you know? So I made sure that on side one and when we recorded side two that I didn't change the guitar tone at all, because that I felt was really where it should be, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It made some continuity throughout all the songs, you know? I didn't want to reinvent the wheel because I felt that worked, you know, right out of the gate. And, the bass tone is very simple. Sounds like a bass. It doesn't sound like a rumbling, you know, distorted anything. It just sounds like a bass, which is those early Kiss records. That's what it was like. It sounded like just a really clean, bouncy bass where he's playing all these walking bass lines, and it was cool. So I kept the bass tones very simple. And then, the rest of it was just making sure that the parts and the lyrics and the swagger all made sense for each individual song, you know? I don't know if that answers your question at all, but that's...
Yeah.
That's kind of what we had to measure by. We had to make sure that if I was writing a Gene song, that the riff was something that Gene might have written. It's lyrics that Gene definitely would have sung, you know? It's a attitude that definitely belongs with Gene songs. And I think you mentioned it a little bit earlier in the conversation. It's like these songs are like leftover songs from other Kiss albums, you know, that didn't make the albums. And that's what it was. We weren't trying to write hits. We were trying to write songs that belonged on 70s Kiss records, you know?
Well, you know, Dennis said that he thought it kind of reminded him of Rock and Roll Over. But when we were listening to these songs on the way down to Nashville that night, I told him that a lot of them reminded me of the individuals writing for the solo albums.
In terms, like, for instance, the Ace songs, I would say Ace's 78 solo album was definitely the yardstick that I was measuring by on both of those songs, Streetwise and Jendel. I figured it would be like songs that Ace would have written or recorded for his 78 solo album, except Peter Chris was playing drums on them on his best day instead of, you know, Anton's day. It was always keeping the four original guys in mind. So if any drum parts were drum parts that Peter would have played or has played or could have played, we didn't want to stray from the four personalities and their playing style on the songs. But I would say that even Victims is inspired a little bit by Gene's solo album as well, you know? So
right.
It definitely goes from the solo albums back. I'll give you an example. There's a song on side two called Ain't No Fool. And that, to me, when I wrote that one, I was thinking, this is like something off of Dress to Kill, you know? And it resonated with me originally, you know, immediately. So I'm like, fact that it's from an album off of since 1975 makes no difference that we're calling the band Classic 78. If I can write a song that sounds, a good song that sounds like it could have come off of Dress to Kill, then that's enough for me, you know? So it's kind of there's different things in there, but different things resonate with different people. You know, I could say Passion and Love is kind of like a rock and roll over Mr. Speed song, and someone else could say it sounds like Paul Stanley's 7/8 solo.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And that's all good as far as I'm concerned. You know, it's however anybody interprets it or whatever it reminds them of. If it reminds them of something good, then we're totally comfortable with that, you know.
Bill, your microphone's off.
Yeah, hold on. He's trying. Right. Okay. I mean, unmute.
Come on, Bill, get it together.
I'm telling you. We're all, you know, at least two of us are some level of not well.
Yeah, so we've been coughing with the
coughing and hacking and stuff. It's interesting you said that about Dressed to Kill, because, well, if you watch this back, you will see me, when you said that about Ain't No Fool, I raised my hands and went, yes, that's exactly what I thought, because that's exactly what I picked up, which now that'll be funny because there's no audio.
That walking bass line, though, I mean, that was Dressed to Kill big time. You know, that's one thing, my favorite thing about Dressed to Kill.
That's my favorite record. One of my favorite record, Kiss records, and that's my favorite song on here. I thought it was that song, just the bass line on that song, and actually, that's just cool. So, how long did it take you to guys to get from concept to completion, putting it out?
That's a good question. And so, even though, like for instance, I said I started to write songs just as an experiment around 2009 into 2010, we actually didn't. Get into this, or I should say I didn't actually present it to the guys as an actual project that I wanted to record and release them until about maybe March of 2016, and then there was more writing involved, and then we started cutting drums in August of 2016. So from August of 2016 until, I think, February 10th, we worked on, finishing the arrangements and all the recording of side one, which is, the first six songs. So that was August of 2016 to February 10th of 2017. And then it was released on Valentine's Day in 2017.
That's a great wedding anniversary present for my wife. Even though
she doesn't like Kiss. And I was like, I think Kiss's first album was released sometime around here. I'm not sure. So I was like, okay, this is, I think it was February something in 1974. So I'm like, all right, so that's going to be my goal. And I didn't want to, I had to have a hard line, a hard date, to complete this thing. Otherwise, you just keep going sometimes. I like to have a deadline.
Yeah. So did you record this in a professional studio, or was this like kind of a homegrown kind of thing?
It was a homegrown thing. You know, Rory, who's the drummer, he has like a studio, a soundproof studio, rehearsal studio in his house. So we set up, him and I would go through the songs and then we'd get the arrangements down that we wanted, and then I'd start cutting drums, start cutting his drum tracks at his house. And then I would put down bass and guitars at my house and vocals down at my house. And for the Paul songs, I would send Joe, who sang all the Paul songs, I would send him the Paul tracks without any vocals. And then he'd record his Paul vocals at his house. And Joe produced and produced all his vocals himself, and then he'd send the vocal back to me, and then I'd mix everything together.
Cool.
It was all It's all homegrown, and it one of the things is what we like about it is that we didn't use Pro Tools or anything like that, and that's not a bad thing. Pro Tools is awesome, but we just used the bare essentials of what was needed to achieve what we wanted to achieve. We didn't have to do a 48 track recording to capture a little bit of magic and capture some of the personality and the character of those albums and their writing style, So we didn't want to go overboard with production value per se. We wanted to make sure that we had songs that we were happy with, that we felt were strong, you know, in terms of what we were trying to live up to, you know, in terms of, you know, all those songs we love from those Kiss, those early Kiss albums, you know. So we kept the production very simple. You know, each song has one rhythm guitar on the left speaker and another rhythm guitar on the right speaker. You know, there's not three or four different layers of guitars. You know, the bass is right up the middle. On the first record, I think the drums was three mics. We didn't even mic the whole kit, you know. And on side two, we mic'd the entire kit, so it's a little bit of a tighter and slightly better quality drum, you know, production on the second side. But the bass and the guitars and the vocals were all produced the same way it was on side one. So there's a continuity there still for everything, you know.
Awesome.
Cool. It's interesting. I was playing this in the car. I had my 17-year-old with me, and last week I guess it was, and I had it in the car, and I'm, hey, check this out, and we're listening to it, and he's like, I've never heard those songs before. I go, I said, no, you probably haven't. He goes, where did you get that record? That's a really cool Kiss record. I said, sorta. And I showed him the cover, and he was like, man, this is really good stuff. This is really, really cool. So he was very impressed with it. It definitely, you know, the thing, your comment about the production, I think is really what I like about the older Kiss stuff too, is, you know, it isn't all slicked up production. It isn't trying for perfection. It's really about...
not overproduced, you know.
Not overproduced. And the fact you didn't use Pro Tools, you know, you could probably send that to some folks in Nashville and say, hey, if you want to make a record, here's how you make one without using Pro Tools.
Right, yeah. I think what's good about it is because, you know, Kiss, those first Kiss albums, you know, those first six studio albums, they were meat and potatoes. I mean, obviously Destroyer was a huge upgrade and a huge task in terms of them having to up their game and be a little bit more extravagant, having Bob Ezrin produce that record. And it's awesome. And then to follow that up with something as meat and potatoes and ballsy as Rock and Roll Over, you know, it's just as satisfying. So, you know, I think for the most part they were meat and potatoes and just making sure whatever they were putting down was cool, you know, as far as they were concerned. We like this. This is cool. We're going to move forward with this song. So I think, you know, whether you're recording on a four track or whether you're recording on Pro Tools or whatever, if you have a turd, it doesn't matter what technology you have, you know. If you don't have a song, you can't Pro Tools a turd into a good song. So, you know, and that's all subject to anyone's opinion.
Well, they did, but it's called Miley Cyrus. But anyway, sorry.
So because those Kiss songs were recorded simply and usually in a rush because they usually didn't have much time, especially for the first two records. But it kind of takes it kind of makes it simple for us on that aspect where they're not known for piling guitars and guitars on top of guitars. You know, we could achieve, you know, approximate, you know, the style. And again, it just goes back to the songs. If we didn't have songs that we were happy with and that we hoped people would like, you know, it didn't matter how great the guitar tones were or how cool the drums were or anything. So, you know, the songs were always the primary factor. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, we found is that, you know, everybody likes different things, you know, on this, right, on these records, you know. So people, we're getting contacted about, Passion and Love is my favorite song, or World on Fire is my favorite song, or I love American Made. And, you know, like Bill, you know, Joe, who sings all the Paul songs, his favorite song is Ain't No Fool, you know, and that's a Gene song on this record, on side two, you know. So it's, everybody out there has a different take on what they like and what they don't like. And as far as what we've gotten back from people so far is that they just enjoy the whole thing. And from day to day, their favorite songs change. And there's other people who just like what they like. And I think our batting average on both sides in terms of quality songs is pretty good, you know. Again, we're not writing hits. We're trying to write, you know, songs that belonged on those Kiss records that were in the same, that could fit into those, you know, those records. So But again, we didn't want the songs to suffer. We wanted them to be good, but we're not writing hits. We're writing something that's as cool as All American Man, or as cool as I Want You, or as cool as, Dr. Love, or Love Him and Leave Him, that type of thing.
So I have a scenario for you, Tom.
Gene, go ahead, Alan.
Gene and Paul invite you to come on the cruise to play your songs. Do you show up on the cruise with the white makeup, the wigs, and the sunglasses? Or do you turn the cruise down?
No. I think that's funny that you mentioned that. And, regarding that, first of all, if we were invited to play the cruise, we would definitely do it. Whether we would do the white face and the glasses and all that stuff, we'd be a little bit more rocked out than we were at the expo.
I thought the way y'all were at the expo was genius.
It's funny.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. It's funny. Perfect. It was perfect. Yeah. It was perfect.
Yeah, it was kind of out of necessity because I kind of put us in a predicament where, the Atlanta Expo was coming up, and we were getting so much positive feedback all last year about both of these releases, and it's like, if we, maybe we should make one public appearance and just meet some people face to face, we'll put both of the Download albums on one CD, give people an opportunity to have a physical copy of this thing, and we'll repackage it, and even though we've had two releases, we'll call it the unoriginals, because Kiss put their first three releases on the originals, so just a little tongue in cheek, we'll put a little tip of the hat and we'll call it the unoriginals, and we'll repackage the two Downloads and just be able to say hi and thank you and just get more of a personal interaction, since we're not a gigging band and nobody knows who we are and stuff like that. I thought that might be cool. And then as we were getting closer to it, I was like, I wonder, if we should just be ourselves, or maybe we should make sure we don't ruin it, because most people would rather not know they enjoy the mystique of it.
Right.
While they listen to this. Okay?
Right.
So it's like, yeah, we'll come up with something cool that'll be very obviously reminiscent of Kiss and as close as you can get without doing any trademark infringement.
Gene knocking on your door going, sir.
Yeah, exactly. So
you're next Tom,
so,
right?
Exactly, right. So Rory had he's the drummer, so he had the green aviator mirror glasses on, and I do both Gene and Ace, but I'm really a lead guitar player in terms of my primary skill set. So I had the white makeup and the Ace hair and the blue aviator, mirror glasses, and it's just a little nice way to do a tip of the hat to what we're doing without, clearly we're not Kiss, so it was a nice way to do it without being Kiss yet still being very Kiss-like. So it was like, yeah, let's do that. But what's that?
I said that was genius. I'm telling you.
Yeah, thank you, man. And but I would say, back to your question, is if we got invited to do the cruise, we would definitely play. And based on what's gone, based on what happens between then and now, it'll either be our first and last show, being ourselves, or it'll be our first and last show with people never knowing who we are, with the white face. And I think that would be better. I think that would be the better way to go. And I think the guys would certainly agree with that as well, as to just to keep the mystique going. But I can tell you that if we did play, all these guys are great players, and we all have loads and loads of live experience and different band scenarios and stuff like that, playing festivals or playing casinos or playing clubs or whatever. So we've all been up and down from the top to the bottom in terms of our live experience, so that wouldn't be an issue. I think people would be pleasantly surprised, because there's a lot of people who know who we are, but there's way more that don't know who we are.
Right.
So if you can imagine, we'd be on the cruise, and all of a sudden, what the heck's this? What's going on? And then they hear us play some of our material, and they go, wait a minute, what's going on here? Maybe blow a few more minds, It would be fun, And what we would like to do is, if we were to do that, is we would play our songs, but we'd also throw in a couple, do some Kiss nuggets that we know nobody's going to play. you know, that we think are cool. Just
well,
kind of.
You're gonna be.
It could be anything.
Kulik brothers now. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right. That. Well, that's the thing too. Is that, you know, we would stick with the 70s stuff. So. We wouldn't be stepping on anybody's toes or anything like that. But that's all. Yeah,
basically,
you know, that's all.
You don't
that's all.
Play any of the 15 songs that the Kiss plays. Or 20 songs.
Yeah, right. Yeah, our chances of stepping on their set list are pretty remote, too. But we would definitely do it. And, you know, it was something that we'd like to have happen if it makes sense for them and the people that put the crews on, you know. So we'll see what happens, you know. We haven't been contacted or asked or anything at this point, but you know, anything can happen over the next couple months, you know, and it would be a nice way to celebrate the few releases that we have and do something special for ourselves and for the people who dig what we're doing, you know.
Have you got any feedback from them at all? Any of the band members at all? Know about it? Have you gotten some feedback?
We have. And the first thing was, like I said, we released Side One in you know, the Download EP in February of 2017, and I would say by the end of March, maybe the beginning of April, it's kind of fuzzy for me now, but we had heard that Paul, we had heard from somebody who contacted us saying, hey, just a heads up, you know, Paul Stanley loves what you guys are doing, he's sharing it with all his friends, you know. You gotta check this out. So we were like, wow, you know, we had no way to corroborate that, but it was nice of that person to let us know, because he was in the know about it, and so we had an idea that at that point that Paul had known. And then I would say in May, an acquaintance of mine is a friend of Paul's in the industry, and they were talking about something else via text, and just out of, you know, my buddy said, just for the hell of it, I said, hey, have you ever heard of this Classic 78 thing? And then Paul responded to him. And he had no idea that, you know, his friend was my friend. You know, my friend just asked him, you know, blindly. And he replied to him and said, he goes, yeah, I have heard this. He goes, as far as the Classic 78 goes, I think they, you know, I think they really captured our sound and our style from those early records. And they did a great job. And he goes, and he said something to the effect of, you know, and I'm really surprised at how much the Paul guy sounds like me. Back then. Because I've never heard anybody sound as close to me as this guy does, you know. And you know, he was very complimentary, and he said, you know, he goes, I don't think the songs are great, you know, like you know, in terms of what he would consider great songs, but I think they did a great job, and they really did capture the feel and the vibe of that stuff. He goes, and he said something to the effect of, and I enjoy listening to it, even just for the novelty of, you know. And that's, to the, you know, our perspective is like the fact that he even knows who we are. Is the fact that he's picking up on the fact that he's the guy who did this, you know, who created this style or helped create this style, and the guy who sang a lot of those songs is recognizing himself or their recorded history in the stuff that we did. It's like, wow. So I'm imagining Paul sitting in his car listening to it, or sitting in his house by his, you know, on a sound system listening to or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, my mind's blown, exactly. And the guy's going, holy crap. So it was cool. And then my buddy said, he goes, that's great to hear. He goes, because it's actually one of my best friends, you know, who put that together. And he said, well, tell them they did a great job. Make sure you tell them I said so, you know. So that was very cool. And I wasn't offended, and the guys weren't offended about him saying the songs weren't great, because they're not great songs. We're not Bob Dylan, or, you know, and they're not great in terms of the history of
songs. It doesn't have Paul Stanley's name on it, that's why.
Well, as far as we're concerned, these songs are just as good as any of the Killer Filler on the Kiss record.
Paul. A tribute to Kiss. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, basically.
I'd say some of my favorite songs are not Love Gun and not Dr. Love, which I love both of those, but I love Love 'Em and Leave 'Em. I love Got Love for Sale. I love Tomorrow Tonight, you know, so whatever it is, or All American Man, you know, those are all of that stuff is the stuff that, you know, that we were going for. So we weren't trying to, you know, do anything more or anything less than that.
Exactly. Tom, do you have more songs in the repertoire that you have not recorded?
Yeah, we do. We have we still have we have one or two ideas from the first record that we didn't even use on the second record because just more material was kept coming up and kept coming up. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to make sure that when we released side two that I didn't, you know, write anything that repeated the same type of feel or vibe of the songs on side one. So that was a little bit of a challenge because I would come up with things and I go, ah, that sounds like the same type of song as Please and Tease. So I got to hold off on that. You know, if I didn't want to duplicate too many things if I didn't have to.
Sure.
And that was a good challenge because I came up with more stuff. And now I would say there's probably four songs that are, you know, that would be ready to record if we wanted to. As of right now, we could go and record them right now.
So what you could do is make a side three of your classic 78 album.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's the just, thing. Like, just say live for the, you know. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, the thing is if we do continue to do some more, it could be side three and be some six songs, or it could be a whole album of 10 songs, you know? I'm thinking about that idea to maybe up the ante a little bit, but they got to be really good and they have to really go together well. And, you know, but if we do something, it would either be another six or no more than 10, you know, but they're there and it's just a matter of thinking about it and making sure that, you know, the time is right. And that, you know, with our schedules and life and, you know, making sure that the material is the rest of the material is up to snuff. But, you know, the ideas keep coming. I keep putting them down, you know, and then they keep expanding and people are enjoying it. I mean, what's funny is that there's, you know, when we put this out, I was like, okay, now get ready to get torn apart, you know, by the Kiss fan base because we're all so,
you're not,
you know,
wrong.
We're all intense, right? And I'm pleasantly surprised, and the guys are pleasantly surprised that the majority. There's very few people who have been slamming this in any way or say, I just don't like it. That's fine. Not everybody it's not for everybody, you know, it's for whoever it resonates with. That's it, you know, but, you know, we thought maybe 40 people will like this, you know, if we're lucky, who knows, you know, it doesn't really matter.
I think you did better than 40.
we did quite better than 40, but you know, that our expectations weren't anything grand, and this thing has just taken off.
So,
you know, and then again, I
too. So you didn't have great expectations.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's cool. You know, I did see one thing which cracked me up, which you guys might appreciate, and I think any of you guys who do podcasts out there would appreciate this. Is, you know, you'll see somebody go and post something like, this sucks, and this isn't Kiss, this is nothing like Kiss because it doesn't have the magic of this, and, you know, Sonic Boom is better than this and whatever. What a waste of time, you know? This is a total waste of time. Then that person subsequently goes to 11 different other postings over the next five hours related to Classic 78 and posts the same comment. So it's like, you know, I've only seen that a couple times, you know? There's not a large faction of people attacking this, but it's a couple of the same people who say this is a waste of time, yet they spent 5 hours to comment it on, you know, look for places to comment.
They're called trolls.
Yeah, right. And it's, for me, you know, what you guys do and everybody out there in podcast land or anybody who's into social media at all, you know, that's not where I come from. I don't spend a lot of time on social media short of listening to programs, you know, like yeah, you know, like yours and the other Kiss related ones and anything else. So it was funny to see that, you know. It's like someone who said this was a waste of time spent from 11 p.m. until 3:30 a.m. you know, finding places to make that comment, you know. So it's like, exactly. Okay, it's not for everybody. I don't know who. We're not trying to convert anybody. We're preaching to the choir, you know. We're not trying to convert anybody, you know.
Well, and in the words of Gene Simmons, you know, any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah. And again, the beauty of it is that, you know, 99% of any feedback we got has been, this is great stuff. Yeah. I get a kick out of this, or, you know.
You're going to have those idiots, so.
Yeah, it reminds me of when I was a kid, man. Keep doing what you guys are doing, you know. Or this is the best thing Kiss has released. You know, this is the best thing since Love Gone, or, you know, just all these great compliments. And you know, when you guys listened to it, at some point you heard something that made you smile or go, holy shit. You
know? Oh, yeah, definitely. That's why we're. That's why you're here tonight.
Right.
Exactly.
And it didn't have to be all 12 songs to make you do that. It could have just been one or two that got you off the bat, you know. Yeah. But I know for most people who like 70s Kiss, you're going to hear something here that's going to make you smile or go, holy shit, or go, wow, that's pretty cool, you know. I think we covered a lot of the bases, you know, between the vocals being, you know, pretty close to the real guys, and the music, you know, the music we're really, really proud of in terms of the style and the swagger and the personalities of the personality of the music for each different guy, you know.
Exactly.
And that's a lot of boxes you have to check off. You know, we're not just slapping stuff together and putting a jingle up on it. We're putting it through the you know, the fine tooth comb before we release it, you know.
Exactly.
It's a lot of fun.
Hey, Tom, for the people who don't know where to contact you and everything, why don't you give us your contact information as far as people want to look at your website or buy your CD or all your other stuff that you, I know t-shirts, you had t-shirts.
Yeah, absolutely.
But where can people
so,
find you? Go for it.
Absolutely. You can find out about Classic 78, which, you know, again, is an original recording project of all original material that sounds like lost tracks from, you know, a lost 70s Kiss album or tracks from, you know, lost 70s Kiss albums. It's classic78.com. So that would be www.classic78.com. And we release two EPs. Side one is a download that you can get on CD Baby and iTunes. Side two is a download that you can buy on CD Baby, iTunes, and Amazon. And we're working on getting side one on Amazon as well. And for the Atlanta Kiss Expo, we printed up, a limited edition of hard copy CDs that includes both downloadable EPs on one CD. So both EPs are on one CD, and we call that collection the Unoriginals. So it's the same songs, it's just a CD version of CD format for both releases.
Gotcha.
And we have those, and we have t-shirts, and we had a little bit of inventory that came back from Atlanta, and I put in an order for more CDs and more t-shirts last Monday. So I would say in the next 2 weeks you'll be able to purchase physical copies of the CD and t-shirts online, and we'll let everybody know about that in advance. But that's pretty much it, you know. And maybe we'll see some of you on the cruise as a performing act, or as just Kiss fans, or you know, maybe we'll see you at another event that has yet to reveal itself. Who knows?
Exactly. Well, Tom, we sure appreciate you coming on tonight. We really do. Like I said, I was really surprised to see you guys down there. I was like, when I walked to the door, and I said, those are those guys. Classic 78. I was all excited.
Come he was laughing. That was actually great. Sprinting across the room. It was kind of weird.
No, it was great to meet you guys too. You know, Rory and I were there, and we got to meet all three of you guys in one shot. It was a lot of fun, and it was a little chaotic at the beginning before the doors opened. But
definitely.
Everything settled down, and we had a great day, and it was good to meet you guys and say hi to everybody. So as long as we're having fun, we'll keep doing it. And you know, if we do another one, it'll be a surprise just like the last one.
All right.
Perfect.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for spending time with us. Stick around for a second. Anyway, if you want to check us out on agesofrock.com, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Stitcher Radio, and who else, you know, who knows where else. Just go outside and listen. You'll hear us. Anyway. We'll see you guys
on
later.
On that note, y'all. Peace out. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.